This is Three Brothers Talking, and you're about to listen to episode 66. Once again, all the brothers are back together to record this, but once again, we forgot what episode number it was. So here we go, episode 66, talking about living aspirationally, a little more serious podcast, I guess, this time, and enjoy. You don't know what get us down means right now. Golly. Okay, that'll be better than nothing. That's delayed.
Better than nothing.
I want this all in the recording.
No.
I want this all in there, in the B tape, in the back, in the special features section.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We're just making sure you have your editing.
Yeah.
You're just making my life worse. No big deal. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, episode 64, I think, of the Three Brothers Talking podcast. I'm David.
I'm Andrew.
I am Jeremy. I like I'm always the last one too. One of these days I'm gonna mix it up and go beforehand.
You're just gonna jump in.
Interject it. Just jump in.
Interject.
Jump in the middle. Intercept it.
I'm here.
That's right. I'm first. I get to go next.
And I'm Jeremy. Before even David starts talking, be like, and I'm Jeremy.
Whenever you think I'm about to start saying it.
And I'm Jeremy.
This is Three Brothers Talking. Jeremy just goes, I'm Jeremy. Me. I'm Jeremy. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's try that sometime.
Yeah, I will. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do it, though, or what episode. Just do it. Just
okay.
Knock everyone off their game.
Well, it wasn't this one, you know. So
no, it wasn't. Maybe it's the next one. Maybe.
What's the chances maybe. We remember this on the next one?
I'll be honest. I'll probably forget and probably I'll probably make the same joke next time.
Well, we're coming back here, and last episode was the COVID trivia episode. I don't know. Maybe we made your day a little better, lightheartedly talking about the last year and a half we've all done.
Not trying to step on any toes or anything.
Yeah, I don't think we got political the whole time, so that's good. Mm-hmm. Maybe we got political when we talk about pot. I don't know.
There wasn't that much politics. It was slightly political.
Yeah, yeah. But we're getting back here to do a quick episode about this term that has become more and more important. I don't know, over the last 2 or 3 months, let's go 3 months, since I heard it for the first time, that it's become really, it's just been something that's stuck in my head a lot. And I heard it on this podcast that was called Then Comes What, is the name of the podcast.
It's a good podcast.
And it's a podcast that's about marriage, family, having babies. And it's predicated on the whole, like, you know, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes what is a podcast done by Warhorn Media. They have a lot of good podcasts. Shout out to them. Search them on any podcast catcher and you'll find a lot of good stuff.
Listen to them after us.
What if we ever get on Warhorn? That'd
I would love that. Dude, oh my goodness. I would love to be on
I'm
that.
I'm just saying. Maybe we hit the big leagues.
I would straight up. Reach out to them.
We can ask them.
I don't know if we're ready to say that. Like our first time recording in 2 months.
Episodes. Yeah. We've done this
64 times. Name anyone else who's done it more than that.
Yeah, and we took a 2 month break.
David's a pastor.
Well, we had a baby.
I'm a project engineer. Andrew, you're an accountant, internationally renowned. Who doesn't want us on their media platform podcasting?
Exactly. Hey,
that's my pitch.
There you go. That's my pitch.
I'm basically like Schmidt from New Girl. Yeah.
Yes, I am. I am marketing. They call you. They call you marketing.
Not yet.
This is a quick episode though, because we've all actually got to get to bed soon. But Andrew's eating his dinner because that's what parenting is like. The other day, Rachel and I had dinner at 10 o'clock at night because that was when we got to eat together. So we had dinner at 10 o'clock at night.
There you go. That's how what's important works. Right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a shout out to one of the pastors at our church, Justin, who bought me Weller Special Reserve whenever I had him. It's very good. Very good. In his words, it's one of the best screw top bottles around, and I would agree with him.
Can you say screw top on a podcast without being edited?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I hope
it's
so. I'm the editor.
What it is? It's a
top.
That means instead of a cork top, you just like got the screw.
Yeah, you actually unscrew it, which normally is like cheaper, right?
What did you think it was?
I don't know. I just never heard the top screw.
It's not a euphemism.
I don't know what these things are.
Anyway,
you could be using your slang words. I don't know about.
Anyway,
cool hipster slang.
So yeah, it is literally screw, which normally cheaper bourbons are screw tops, right? But this one's very good.
Yeah, that's why I'm drinking. I have Maker's Mark.
There you go.
And I sponsor myself.
I think Maker's Mark is surprisingly good.
I wish I would have gotten on. I don't mind it. I wish I would have gone back and got the Elijah Craig one.
Yeah,
I like a little Elijah bit more Craig's than the good. Maker's Mark one.
Yeah.
Especially for a budget beer or budget bourbon. I do like a little lot, but I like Elijah Craig probably more.
And Andrew's got Buffalo Trace because you can't get that around here. You have to get it from Colorado, and Andrew got it from out there. So jealous of that.
If you don't know that story, listen to our previous podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
See how I did that? That's professionalism.
A retro tease. That'll bring in the numbers on the last episode.
No, we're probably re-listening to it like, oh, I missed that part. And they're like, and re-listen to it.
Where we didn't even talk. Where we didn't even actually talk about how Andrew got it out there.
That's the best part. Is they'll keep listening to it over and over again
to listen to find out where it is. Andrew, give us the long story, like the long story, very short about how you got that bottle, because you gave it to me earlier.
It was just we obviously stocked up for the house for this bachelor trip. We got 3 bottles to take care of a dozen guys for 4 days or whatever. One of them did not get opened, and then we were the last group to leave the house for the airport. So the bottle was left there, and it came in my luggage.
Love it.
So, there you go.
Love it when everyone else just forgets about something, and you just get exactly.
Yep. And you get free bourbon.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I guess I'll keep this.
I was like, we all contributed, so it wasn't free. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about living aspirationally. That's the topic of this episode.
What does that mean, Dave?
So living aspirationally is this term that was used mainly by the Puritans, and it's kind of couched in Old English. So, we wouldn't necessarily use the word aspirational that way, because when you and I talk about living aspirationally today, we kind of think about living with a dream, right? Like living and trying to accomplish something, having an aspiration.
Yeah.
Now, when they use the term, they used it meaning you had this dream or this focus on other people, like aspiring to be impressive and renowned in front of other people, was kind of what they used aspirationally meaning.
From a peer-to-peer perspective. Yeah.
Yeah, it's this idea, like in the context that I first heard it from this podcast, Then Comes What, we've come full circle, because I remembered that's what we were talking about at the beginning of all this. They were talking about how the kind of the yeses and nos of women, wives working outside the house. So, what are the good motivations for that? What are the bad motivations for it? And one of the things that one of the pastors brought up was like, well, people need to be wary that they're not doing what the Puritans talked about, living aspirationally. Like, oh, actually, I want my wife to keep working because we just want the car that is impressive to the people around us, or we want our lifestyle to look a certain way to the people around us, things like that, right? So that's kind of the gist of what this topic means. I don't know if you guys can explain it in a better way.
It reminded me of Keeping Up with the Joneses when you kind of explained it.
Yeah, Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Like living, because when you say living aspirationally, I think more of serving aspirationally in a serving context and doing things for the other people's sake. Like,
yeah,
not necessarily. I would summarize it more in our context of America in 21st century of keeping up with the Joneses more than anything else.
That was really good. And, I should have said that.
Yeah. And your point there is basically serving for a self-gratification type
purpose. This is what I'm expected to do. Yeah. I guess it could be a two-part context. If you're the aspect of keeping up the Joneses materialistically in America and your church, or of keeping up the Joneses for the sake of I'm doing this role because it feels like I'm expected to do this role.
Yeah. It's a kind of a combination of materialism and reputation and striving after those things. So here's my thought. We'll go through this, kind of have 3 parts to the conversation. Part number 1, where do we see the temptation and the danger of doing this in our own lives? Or where do we see it happening, Number 2, what are some warning signs that clue you in, like, ooh, I'm in aspirational territory here, if that makes sense. Number three, how in the world do we not do this? Why should we not do this? Maybe we can start with why we shouldn't do this, but those are kind of the three big things. This is the most like roadmapped any episode's ever been, and it was thrown together right beforehand by me. So starting it off, where do you guys think you feel this urge in your life? This is personal too. Like this is,
yeah,
this, yeah, go ahead. Don't make me go ahead because I asked the question.
Jeremy, I guess, can you explain one more time what you mean by in your own lives as far as this whole thing? I guess
what I'm asking is, where do you fall prey to this? Like, where do you fall prey to trying to keep up with the Joneses? Where do you fall prey
or
to
doing something for the expectation of the others kind of thing?
Yeah, like, yeah, serving for expectation of others. Where do you fall prey to? I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, the type of house, the type of car in the driveway, the type of perception you give off to people. Where do you feel like it touches your life, if you think about it?
Hmm. And if you have something, go ahead.
No, I mean, yeah, I was like, I think it's basically the two avenues of thought that I went down would be, I definitely felt in the past and been convicted in the past of the attitude of like service in the church, and how that can, how you can creep into like, basically you get into the mental state of service in the church is an expectation of me, because, you know, I consider myself as far as like, you know, an established believer, a contributor, and active in my church body and stuff like that. And so that's why I think it can be dangerous in that aspect of ongoing service, just to make sure you're not getting, you know, basically run down in that whatever ministry. And then the other aspect is, I think, as you know, especially me, like being in the corporate world, as I begin to like work my way up through a career and everything like that, and you reach a certain status level as far as your well-being in your life, we've got, you know, the cars that get us what we need to, they get us around. I have a car for both me and my wife. I have a house for my children. I have everything that we've achieved, and we, you know, we continue to strive on, and I want to do well in my job so that I excel to, you know, possibly get to further levels, not for just the further level's sake, but just for performing well. And that's where I think it can reach into of just like trying to maintain the status level, and making choices that oftentimes are impacted by that, you know, maintaining the status quo of everything that we've achieved thus far.
What's,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's that subtle. I think, Andrew, this is I felt this in some of the limited ways I've experienced it, but I'm sure that you felt it as well, because you've had, you're an accountant, and there's a sort, like, Jeremy's had a corporate job and whatever, but like, I feel like accounting is like the prototypical corporate type job. And, you've had it at, you had it as a younger guy, you had it at a huge firm, and now you have it at a huge company. And as you get up there, you start to feel, I think another way to define all this is like being aware and living for peer pressure, living for the expectations of peers. And as you get higher up, as your title increases, the people around you pretty readily think like, you just start to feel the pressure of like, oh, should I be driving a nicer car? Like, is it okay if, you know, I'm talking, the people around me, you know, all their wives are also this type of career, or like all their all their kid, they're telling me the stories about their kids going to these schools or doing these activities or, you know, fill in the blank. And you start to feel the pressure of spending the money, spending the time, how other people seem to approve of it.
Yep. I think from our aspect, you have the, it's been slightly different now with going to Burma versus other companies. But I mean, the old company, I remember driving the old truck if they had to drive my car and got a few things about, like, I don't know, what is what it is, being an engineer and then driving it in order. Truck around if we have to entertain clients and whatnot. And I'm like, well, my job is to entertain clients. My job is to be an engineer.
Yeah.
So there you go. But also,
if you want me to entertain clients, buy me a car.
yeah, basically. I'm like, well, if you want to pay me more, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you don't want to pay me more. That's why I'm not there anymore.
Yeah.
one of the many reasons I'm not there anymore. But I think that aspect of you have certain things you think are expected of you, not even from like a lifestyle standpoint. I think doing tasks, for me, it comes down to doing more tasks you think are expected of you. So you think you have to do them without really evaluating whether A, you want to do them, or B, you should do them.
Hmm.
I think that you have the fact of, okay, I think we want our house to look a certain way or our lifestyle to look a certain way. Without evaluating, well, what do we want our lifestyle to look like? Or how does God want our lifestyle to look like? Like, what gifts has he given Faith and I? And that's something we're learning and I'm trying to cultivate more, imperfectly, but definitely trying better. But I evaluating from that aspect and not falling in just like the traps of, this is where our house is supposed to look. This is where our family is supposed to look. This is what we're supposed to do, whether homeschool, private school, public school, or whatever.
We're supposed to look but a not certain really way.
Evaluating. Right.
Yeah.
And not evaluating the aspect of, well, how can we be content now with what we have and how can we work toward those things together?
Yeah.
Because our life will be different than everyone. And that's hard, especially like us three are very similar, but all our lives are going to look very different. Which is easy to sit there and say, well, we should be pretty close, but we won't be.
Yeah.
I think too, it's something that I've noticed, like it, the mentality is something to guard against in whatever possible ministries that you've been plugged into, because like it's definitely something that can garner apathy in whatever ministry, just because of the mentality that, you know, like say you're participating in the worship team or you're serving in some capacity and you just go through it and it can get into the mentality of you are dependent on for whatever team you're working for. You are basically you're expected to participate in all that. And to so you can look at and get some self-esteem accredited from that if you do not guard against it.
Yeah.
And that's where if you're in the same ministry, I think for a long time, no matter what avenue that is, you know, I think that's something that you should be aware of and kind of it's something you have to guard against and check yourself too.
I think that's something that especially like checking against Andrew and I, Dave and I know we talked about this fact of like having more of a rotational, like you don't get into certain ruts, like from a certain perspective. But yeah, the aspect of being able to step back out when seasons change, your life changes, which y'all like, we get excited when life changes, but also when life changes, okay, but what happens next is the operative question that doesn't get answered really easily. And it must be done person to person, family to family.
Can you give an example of that? Sorry, I'm trying to grasp what you're saying.
I mean, I'm just thinking, so going back, okay, so doing... I played piano and got one of the ways of stepping back out for a little while. I wanted to serve differently. So I was very adamant stepping back into playing piano that I wouldn't do it very often. So I could do other roles as far as being hospitality. Like that's something Jeff and our pastor talked about when we were transitioning.
You had your second kid coming along.
Well, yeah, but even going before we even started, he and I had conversations like about, cause I was doing that at New Life and leading high school youth group. So basically Sundays were gone for the entire month. And Faith and I were married with a kid and another one on the way. So Jeff and I had a lot of conversations. Like, I don't want to step into something too fast, too frequently with us not ready for it.
Yeah.
So it's very much if I'm going to, and I want to do other things that, like, I don't say bigger aspirationally, but just like different ways to serve and different giftings that I know I have, like hospitality lead. I'd like to hopefully, who knows, do other kind of speaking or something.
Yeah.
Down or teaching areas. And those opportunities have come, but it's like, well, it's just not the right time. Like, even talking to someone else, like, I've done youth group for years and helped start up different youth group programs and discipleship groups previously, but I have opportunities to do that at our new church. I'm like, this is not the right time. And I think the people who are doing it, I think you guys would do great. And if I can help, I will, but from more of a consulting basis at this point.
Yeah.
So I guess like that kind of thing.
So yeah, there's an ability, like if you're living in one way, living aspirationally is trying to people please all the time. That's one aspect of it, is like, I'll do whatever I'm asked because I'm afraid to tell people no. And then the other side of the coin is not people pleasing, but it's like people, I don't know, like you almost want to, this is an extreme language, but you almost want to like subject people out of how impressed they are of you. Right. So you're either trying to people please and make everybody happy because your self-esteem is tied up in how pleased they are with you and how great they think of you, or you're trying to like just be so impressive to everyone. And the problem with both of those things is obviously that the motivation of both of those things is yourself, you know. And one of the warning signs, like I think, like one of the warning signs for me in all this, when I see, oh, I think that there's, because really the background of this is pride and wanting to be well thought of, all that stuff. So whenever I'm thinking about the warning signs of this, I think that sometimes when you're going through like decisions, like say you're trying to make a decision, like Rachel and I having had in, we've had to make all kinds of decisions about like, okay, what should work look like for Rachel? What should work look like for David? You know, we talk about all these things. We talk about, you know, what are our plans for a few years down the road when he's like going to start school? What's going to happen? Like, what are our goals for raising a kid? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is a warning sign is sometimes in those conversations, I would start to feel a little frustrated and angry, seemingly at no reason, you know, but like there'd be something inside me that would like just want us to make a certain decision. And if I really stepped back from it, it became kind of apparent that my motivation for that decision or that path was because of how other people would perceive it. You know, oh, I want, for example, just an example. We need Rachel to keep working because my salary maybe isn't quite where we want it. And, we'll be able to survive, but will we be able to do the fun things that other people see as fun? Will we be able to take the trips? Will we be able to,
yeah.
And will other people That's look tough. At us? Will other people look at us weird when we say, no, we counted it more important for Rachel to stay home. This is just an example. I'm just throwing out hypotheticals. But like things like that, because that's where the peer pressure kind of comes in. Or alternatively, you could be motivated from the exterior of like, should I rate, where do I send my kids to school? And am I making that decision because I'm afraid of how people around me in my community and my church and stuff will perceive me? Like, I'm sending my kids to X school because if not, I'll be the weird one, you know?
Yep.
Right.
And, you know, examples like that. And this goes.
Well, and I think also.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, dude. Go ahead. No. Go. You were talking. Okay. I interrupted.
No,
sorry.
You're fine. The thing I was going to say to wrap that up is like, this goes back to something Jeremy said earlier of you have to know what God has actually called you to, not in some kind of mystical way where it's like, oh, this is the God gives me a special lowdown on what my family's life should look like, because God doesn't do that. But God does give us convictions, and maybe perhaps some things are more of a priority for us and our family than other people's, but we need to be able to stick to them and say, this is a priority for me. Even other Christians, like the world, we have to first, you better be okay with the world not getting it. Like, yeah. If you and your family, you and your wife have a conviction that our kids aren't going to play in a sports league where they have to play on Sundays, which I think,
yeah.
For the record, is a, for the record, I think that's a great conviction to have. But
yeah,
you have to be okay with the world not getting that for sure. But here's the thing: there are other, there are plenty of convictions, maybe including that one, where you have to be okay with other Christians not getting that. You know, but if it's it's the conviction that God has given you, and He's given you that, then you need living free of those aspirations can say, no, this is what God has told me to do. My self-esteem is wrapped up in what He's told me, not in what other people think of it, not in my bank account, and not what other people perceive my bank account to be, you know? So that's the sermon, I guess, I had in the back of my head for that. Yeah.
And I mean, the difficulty there is, have you actually spent time to flesh out what those convictions are?
Or are you just going along?
Yeah. Or, yeah, because otherwise you can get tossed around, obviously, very easily. And obviously, what we said this whole time is pride can sleep in those gaps where those convictions aren't actually built up.
Yep.
Pride can tend to sweep in pretty easily.
It's easy. Why do I feel like I need to buy a house now? Well, because everybody else my age seems to have a house. Why do I need to have a girlfriend right now? Everybody else seems to have one. Why do I need to have a wife? Why do I need to have a kid? Why do I need to have a job title? Because everybody else just seems to have one. And you will just... The funny thing about us is that we will default... Unless we're, like you're talking about, Andrew, unless you actually flesh this out purposefully, you'll probably default to just going with the tide that you're swimming in.
Yeah.
Well, and unless you intentionally flesh it out, I think also, and make sure you are both working together, talking about things more.
Yeah. You better do this with your spouse.
Yeah.
And realize that you and your spouse have a different value and conviction than everyone else.
Yeah. You got to meld them together.
That's something that we're trying to flesh out more every day, and things change. Seasons change things. Like, you have extra kid, things change things, but also staying true to the gifts and talents that the Lord has given both of you and how you can use those for His glory. And forget what everyone else thinks, and forget even what you had thought in the beginning, what you thought used to be important.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Isn't necessarily as important anymore.
Yeah. My goodness. The number of things that I thought before I got married, like, oh, these are the things. And now almost four years in, the number of things that are like, oh, these are actually the things. Yeah,
these are what I really value. So it's really important.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things too is learning how to trust God in those things, and trusting God to fill in the gaps when you don't quite get it. Stepping into the uncertainty, I think, more so, which I'm not good at. As someone who's very analytical and wants to think through everything to the nth degree and have a plan in place, sitting there saying we don't know how this is going to work out. But these are the values God's given us, and we're going to obey Him and step forward regardless of the consequences, even if people think it looks stupid.
Yeah. Yep.
And telling yourself that in the mirror every morning when you're like, wow, to my head, this seems stupid.
Yeah.
But to my heart and to what the, because we all have those days, like, what am I doing right now? Like, this does not fit. This doesn't compute.
For whatever reason, saying, it's not matching up.
It doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but saying, well, God said to do these things, so we're going to do them and trust Him and forget the aspiration of how it's going to make you look to whoever else, even to yourself, and saying, well, at the end of the day, if I can say God told me to do this, step in and I guess embrace it.
Yeah.
And encourage others to do the same, like encourage your brothers and sisters to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is obviously like, this is different than just saying, stop caring what other people think about you, because you need the input in the wisdom and the discernment and the correction of fellow believers. But you don't need to be ruled by the worldly expectations that even us Christians can have about life and on each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that'd be a difference of getting wise counsel. And I think, honestly, wise counsel for the most part is there to say, have you thought about this and prayed about this? Are you and your wife on the same page?
This isn't blatantly stupid.
If it's not sinful.
Yeah. It's sinful.
Even if it's not sinful, and say, well, this might not make sense from a worldly, like, what do we read about in Christ saying, I've came, and Paul saying, to destroy the wisdom of the wise. Yep. And the world. So from that perspective, if you can come in, if someone comes to you and says, well, this isn't, and what they say isn't sinful, you've prayed about it, you've thought about it, and you've counted the cost for it and said, we think it's worth it, then it's worth it.
Yeah.
And forget the, I guess, and one thing, leaving the consequences to God.
Forget that you'll be driving an old truck. Forget that you'll be not buying the bigger house. Forget that your kids will share a room. Forget that forget that people will say, why would you leave that job for this job? I mean, Andrew, you at least had a part of that when you left the bigger accounting company you're at, because part of it was like, dude, this work-life balance is not going to work, you know? And at least in some way, I'm sure you had people saying, you know, you had a chance to be big here. Why would you leave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had that.
Too. Yeah. It's there. You did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just really quickly, I want to say, like, this is what having humility really means. A humble person is actually a secure person. A prideful person is really an insecure person. A prideful person needs to be praised and needs to be well thought of. And a humble person is actually freed, because they don't think about themselves all the time. When you're humble, you just... C.S. Lewis said, it's not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And so the humble person is freed up from this pursuit, because they're not spending time worrying about how they're perceived and all that. That's what humility really is. Whereas if you've got pride going on, then you are ruled by having a good reputation and being impressive. You just are.
Mm-hmm. Yep. True.
Yeah. So, real quick, anything to wrap it up about how we get out of doing this? I think we've touched on it in some ways. We talked about having your convictions, fleshing them out, having them united with your spouse. Being humble. I don't know what you guys think.
I think the biggest thing, because obviously you're trying to run a household, the biggest thing is staying on the same page with your wife, which is ongoing day by day. Quickly, like, as you go through years, you can become out of sync if you're not careful in that aspect. And this is something that, you know, you can see evidences slip in either with either spouse if things become out of sync.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And also, if you don't have a spouse, a mentor, make sure. I think that's one thing that's one of the things that was very valuable to me, especially being a young single guy, was make sure I had a mentor and friend that I met up with every other week and talking to him. All we did was like get a beer or get coffee every other week or dinner. But we talked through things. We'd read certain books together and just making sure that I was somewhat isolated and out of touch, someone who's not necessarily blood, who could bounce things off of, who also had a vested interest in me and my future, and also was a Christian and believer.
Yeah.
That relationship is lacking in the church in general. If you don't have a spouse, and I think if you have a spouse, I think it's still a helpful thing to have a mentor in some way, shape, or form. But in addition to that, and especially if you don't have a spouse, having someone else who you can
go through this stuff with. Extremely straight with you. And someone who will, when you look at their life, like Jeremy, I know who you're talking about. Like, so you look at their life and you say, yeah, I wouldn't mind if my life ends up like that. You know, it's not going to look exactly the same, but like the type of people that those people are, I wouldn't mind if I end up looking like that. That's the person you're looking for. So Yeah, and I think the humility thing is huge, and I think it's just it's taking a longer view of things, like understanding that if God has given you convictions, it's okay that you will sometimes disappoint people around you. You might mm-hmm. disappoint them, or you might just make no sense to them. And you have to have the faith that God's not going to just like forget about you and neglect you and your family. That's just not the God that he is. And when he's given you convictions about like, oh, I don't, you know, we don't need this type of house or whatever. Like, it's okay to not look like the world, and it's okay to not even look like other Christians that are around you. It's okay. It might be a very good thing in some cases. And you have to have the humility so that you have to be secure in those things. And the best way to do that is to be a person, be a man, be a woman that spends a lot of time in the word and in prayer so that you know what you're certain of. You're mm-hmm. confident in it. Like, this is what is true. And this is what I'm going to build.
Yeah.
This is where, you know, I'm building on the rock. I know I have the rock, not the sand. I'm going to build on it.
Yep.
And Andrew, I love what you pointed out there about like, you better like work these things out continually with your spouse, because in marriage, you're two different people. And even after you've been mm-hmm. married mm-hmm. for a few years, you're still separate people, and you need to constantly be like, hey, this is what we're still about, right? This is what we're still about. And maybe you need to course correct together. Maybe you need to readjust together. Because you do need to be on the same page, because if you are subverting the expectations of people around you, you need your spouse to be on the same page with you. You need to be on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You need to be on the same team. Otherwise, that conflict is going to creep into your marriage. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the last thing is like, the church needs to be a little better at not looking like the world and not caring. So that's the last thing. Don't be afraid to do that and to be that. Because if you're, especially right now with where we're at, like that's just the reality of where we are. Be okay with not looking like the world and not caring. You know, Christ said, where your treasure is, there your heart it will be also. So we need to look at ourselves sometimes and ask what we're treasuring and what we're aiming at.
Yep. Always.
Yeah. You guys got any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, I think you guys did a good job.
I think it was good. I think we summed it up.
All right. Sounds good. Well, in that case, this was episode 64. Probably. Might have got the number wrong because we never look it up beforehand. we did it. We did it. And I think that we aspired to greatness, and I think we achieved it. This podcast is a great example of not living aspirationally, because we spend very little time wondering what other people will think of it.
I never think of what people think of it.
Just drop it. Never. And we're like, okay. And somebody will listen to it. I don't know.
Yeah. So maybe. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. We're a great example of this. I love it. I love it. Well, in that case, we'll sign off. We did it. And we will see you guys next time.